This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. With another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime, this is Case Closed. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll start off this week with the Black Museum, a series hosted by Orson Welles, and their episode titled Four Small Bottles. Then we'll hear the conclusion of the Alvin Summers matter from yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from October 28, 1955. And then we'll begin the Duke Red matter, first episode from January 23, 1956.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum, the famous repository of death. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, an earthenware pot, a silver shilling, a typewriter ribbon, all are touched by murder. Four small bottles. Other familiar objects, medicine bottles, shining glass, cork stoppered, the labels in neat, clear handwriting. Such bottles are in the medicine cabinet of almost every home. But these were found...
Found one, Inspector. 2 ounce size.
The others can't be far.
Yes, here are two more. 1 ounce capacity, these. And here's the fourth. Innocent little things, aren't they, sir?
Well, today, those four small bottles have a place, a very honored place, in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death. The Black Museum.
Well, here we are, the Black Museum. Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Yes, here lies death. In these hundreds and hundreds of objects, large and small, is the means to death, a thousand methods of killing, all neatly labeled to indicate who and what and where and when. Here's a kitchen mop. Long handles, gray with use, gray where the red-brown stain fails to cover the grayness. Look closely at the harsh metal that binds the strings of this utensil. Yes, this blade struck. And struck again before the mop itself removed the traces of the crime. Ah, here we are. Here are the four small bottles. Three of 1 ounce capacity. One holds 2 ounces. They mark a strange story. A story out of the Edwardian era, when man was still lord of all he surveyed and women were just beginning to demand equality.
To the ladies, Reverend. Although I would prefer toasting them in something slightly stronger than tea.
To the ladies, my friend.
To listen to my husband, Reverend, you think he was old-fashioned. I'm not an advanced thinker for this age.
I, an advanced thinker? Why, Anne, my dear.
But you are, Oscar. You really are.
At the risk of shocking you, Reverend, but then you're a young man, and not, I assume, as easily shocked as some pastors I've known, I believe a man should have two wives.
Really, sir?
He means it, Reverend. Listen to him.
I believe a man needs two wives. One to cook, sew, and care for the household. The other, to be a companion when a man needs intellectual stimulation, to lend beauty to the drawing room, and grace and wit.
Then you would give the latter education.
Exactly. And since I am not allowed two wives, I chose the latter. You're new here, Reverend. You don't know that I married Anne when she was very young and sent her to Brussels and then a French university for her education before installing her here as my wife.
Why? Why, that's unheard of, sir. You are a pioneer in the field, Mr.
Oh, yes, Mr. Oscar Stone, wholesale grocer and a man of means, was truly advanced for his age, the age of 99, and very liberal in his philosophies. In fact, he was so considerate of his wife and of the difference between her age and his own that he encouraged rather than looked askance at her companionship with the Reverend Edgar Sweet, a much, much younger man than Mr. Stone himself.
Edgar... You've been a good friend to me this past month.
I'm happy to hear you say so, Anne.
That is why, well, I'm not hesitating to tell you something which I feel is rather unfair.
Tell me what it is.
Oscar has drawn his will.
Oh, he's my friend, my good friend. I'd hate to see him pass on, but every man must have his house in order.
Edgar, you don't understand. Making the will is all right. It's what he's put in it.
Go on, my dear.
He has left me his entire estate, provided I never marry again.
That is his right, you know.
It's not his right. He's afraid someone might marry me after he's gone. For the money.
He's only protecting you from fortune hunters, Anne.
Then why did he give me an education, if he doesn't think enough of me to let me protect myself?
A serpent in Eden? Perhaps. Perhaps not. But it is clear that the young lady had a will of her own and wanted to control her own destiny. In any case, the friendship ripened, not only between the two young people, but between Edgar and Oscar as well.
Edgar, my friend, I'm not well. I saw a doctor today, and I am not well.
I can't believe it. You look fine. Fine.
The debilitation of age.
But you're not old. Oh, 55 isn't old.
When you've worked as hard as I have for almost 50 of those 55 years... Well, in any case, I've decided to take a rest.
Excellent, Oscar. That's what you need, an extended vacation.
I've made arrangements to go to the shore. A month at the sea ought to practically, well, rejuvenate me.
I'll miss you. Our talks have been a great stimulus to my work.
And I thought that, well, even pastors have vacations occasionally.
Occasionally we do.
Of course. So I reserved accommodations for you, along with Anne and myself.
But I can't possibly afford...
As my guest.
You don't know how much I appreciate this, Oscar, but I couldn't accept this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were alone, Oscar.
I'm glad you came in, Andy. I was telling Edgar we're going to the shore for a month.
Oscar, how nice.
I'm insisting that Edgar come along as my guest.
How can I accept such an invitation?
Tell him you will find him as welcome as I will, Anne.
Of course I'll find him welcome, Oscar. Edgar knows that.
They compromised. Edgar came for weekends. The ripening of a friendship. Or the growth of a triangle. A classic triangle. Husband, wife, and the young man. The summer ended. Oscar and Anne returned to new lodgings in Pimlico, and they took an additional room.
Edgar, do you like it?
Bookcases, a couch, a fine desk, all this room. How could I help liking it?
And in here, right next door.
Edgar, my boy, welcome to your new lodgings. Now, we are not only friends, we are neighbors.
Really, Oscar, I don't know why you...
But there was more, rather interesting. One afternoon, while Oscar was at his doctor's office...
May I disturb you for a moment, Edgar?
Oh, of course, Anne. What is it?
Remember, months ago, I told you about Oscar's will.
Oh, yes, I remember. Why?
He took out that awful clause. If I want to, I can marry anyone I please one day. And you are the executor.
Everything was quite smooth. Quite smooth. In fact, Oscar began to feel quite a bit better. At least he said so, and insisted that Edgar and Anne accompany him to a horse show.
Why do you love horses so, Oscar?
Perhaps because I always wanted to ride and never learned. Oh, there's a fine animal.
He must be at least 16 hands high.
Edgar, why don't you take Anne to the stalls to see her favorites? I'll just sit here a while. I guess I'm not as strong as I thought I was.
Will you, Edgar, please?
You think you'll be all right here alone, Oscar?
It's a picture, isn't it? The elderly husband sitting on the bench watching the two young people stroll away. What are his thoughts as he sees them disappear in the crowd? What would his thoughts have been if he'd heard their conversation?
I'm dreadfully worried about Oscar.
He seems much better. Seashore did him good.
Seems is the word. He's not. Not really.
Anne, what are you telling me?
That his doctor has confided to me. Oscar may not live out the year.
The next morning, there were signs that Anne's words might become the truth. She sent for the doctor, a youngish man named Richards, who lived some half a mile from the lodgings.
I don't like this, Mrs. Stone, not at all.
Oh dear.
You stop frightening my wife, young man.
The truth, sir, is the truth. You're not well. Your stomach's in very bad shape. Now I shall prescribe for you, and your wife will see that you take your medicine, won't you, Mrs. Stone?
Oh, of course, doctor.
The young doctor was very certain, but not Oscar. His pain continued. Anne was obviously very upset. She took Edgar aside.
Edgar, I want you to do something for me.
If I can.
I cannot see Oscar suffer the way he does at times. I know a way to ease his pain, but I need your help.
Of course.
I want you to buy me some chloroform.
Chloroform?
Yes. A few drops on a handkerchief and he will sleep easily. I learned about it in the practical nursing classes in Brussels.
But Dr. Richards will get you some.
No. He'll never believe I know how to use it. Here's a pound note. Please, Edgar.
Edgar went to the nearest chemist shop.
What can I do for you, Reverend?
I'd like a little chloroform.
Whatever for, sir?
I understand it's good for taking out grease spots.
Oh, yes, I suppose it is. But be very careful with it.
Three more times, Edgar walked into chemist shops and bought a small amount of chloroform. There are the 3 1-ounce bottles and the 1 2-ounce bottle. Out of consideration for Anne's convenience, no doubt, Edgar poured the contents of all the small bottles into a larger one and delivered the chloroform to Anne. Quite suddenly, Oscar became a whole lot better.
Landlord, I want to speak with the landlord.
Yes, Mrs. Stone? How can I help you?
I want to prepare a surprise for my wife and the Reverend for tonight.
Yes, sir.
A New Year's Eve party. Some roast duck, a bit of cold ham, some good cheese, a bottle of champagne, and a bottle of good brandy.
It's short notice, Mr. Stone. But I'll do my best. What'll you be eating?
What everyone else eats. And will they be surprised? Oh, I'm feeling wonderful for the first time in months. And for breakfast tomorrow, see if your maid can find a haddock, a large one. I feel I shall be quite hungry in the morning.
Oscar wasn't hungry New Year's morning. Oscar was dead. And today, the 4 small bottles which played so large a part in his death can be seen in the Black Museum. Sad New Year's Day for Anne Stone and a bewildering day for the Reverend Edgar Sweet. Oscar Stone, husband and friend, lay dead quite suddenly, and after what seemed an indicated quick recovery. But that was only the first event of January 1st, 1910. Onto the scene strode an old man, Oscar's 75-year-old father. Anne met him at the door to the Stone apartment.
Oh, Father! Father.
Yes, of course. Cry all you want. I want to see my son.
He's in here, Father.
All right. Who is this?
Reverend Sweet, our good friend and pastor.
Yes, I heard about you. Oscar wrote me.
This moment comes to all of us, sir. We can only pray for courage.
I've got courage. What I want is facts. I'll see my boy now. It looks as if he died in his sleep.
He did. So peacefully. I didn't realize it until morning.
You were a good boy, Oscar. I shouldn't be outliving you. There's a funny smell around his mouth.
But the doctor said he had gastritis, Father.
That's not what I smell. Are you having a post-mortem?
Dr. Richards asked for permission to do one.
Richards? Who's he?
The family doctor, Mr. Stone, a fine young man.
All right, if he wants to do it, all right, but I want my man there with him.
Father, are you insinuating?
I'm not insinuating anything. I just don't like the look of this. For his own protection, Miss Richards ought to have another man present, that's all. My boy's no right.
The second doctor arrived, and forthwith, behind locked doors, the autopsy was performed. In the landlord's parlor, Anne waited, with Edgar to give her support and courage. Presently, the door opened.
Mrs. Stone.
Yes, Dr. Richards.
We are ready with our report.
Did you find out anything?
We're not certain as yet. Dr. Fletcher, your father-in-law's man, suggests Mr. Stone swallowed chloroform.
Chloroform?
Yes. Will you come upstairs and hear the report, please?
Anne?
Yes?
Did you... the chloroform I bought for you, that is...
It's still in its bottle, Edgar. Don't worry, you don't even have to mention it. Shall we go upstairs now?
The two young people went upstairs, but not hand in hand. There was a sudden reserve between them. In the room where the doctors nor Mr. Stone awaited them.
This is Dr. Fletcher, my daughter-in-law, Pastor Sweet.
How do you do?
Was Dr. Richards was in charge of the case? Perhaps he's the one to give you our official report.
Oh, please do, Dr. Richards.
It's a simple report. We are unable to find any natural cause of death. The contents of the stomach are suspicious. We're holding them for the coroner.
Have you any particular suspicions, gentlemen?
None which we care to state officially.
You realize the room where death occurred must be sealed and its contents must not be touched.
Oh, my purse is in there.
It'll have to stay there.
Surely I may have my coat and a hat.
I assume so. If Dr. Fletcher's present when you remove them...
Anne went to stay with a cousin, a brief train journey away. The coroner's inquest was held and adjourned, pending a full report from a government analyst. That was all. But Edgar dispatched a note to Anne, and she met him, as he requested, in a quiet tea room in Pimlico.
Edgar, what's the matter with you? You haven't looked me straight in the eye since we met today.
I can't seem to help myself. Anne... Dr. Richards did tell you that Oscar might not live out the year.
Of course he did.
It came so suddenly. They all behaved so strangely. And I'm afraid I'm finished. If this develops into anything, I shall lose my pulpit.
If you don't do anything foolish, I certainly won't.
Everything's going wrong. I feel as if... Anne, I bought that chloroform. If there is chloroform in the autopsy report...
Anne, don't you see?
Oh, forget the chloroform. Forget all about it.
I can't. Where is it? What did you do with it?
I took it with me when I left the apartment. Right in my coat pocket, under the nose of my dear father-in-law. I poured it out of the train window. Then I threw the bottle away.
Oh, that makes it worse. If they prove that Oscar was... But don't you see? They'll trace the chloroform to me.
In other words, Edgar... You're implying that I gave it to Oscar.
I'm not implying anything of the kind.
What else are you saying? Edgar, you helped me over a bad time. Now I think it will be best if we do not see each other anymore. Goodbye, Edgar.
The lady was annoyed, perhaps rightly so. The young man was frightened, very rightly so. In their separate ways, each awaited the report of the government analyst. At long last, Dr. Richards came to the young widow.
The news could be a lot worse, Mrs. Stone. They could have found arsenic or one of the slower, more common poisons.
Oh, what have they found, Doctor?
Poisoning by chloroform.
Oh, Doctor, that is the worst.
How so? Don't tell me you had some in your possession.
I did. I had my reasons. Doctor, my married life was not happy. I am young. He was old. Practically my father. He kept putting me... In Edgar's company, I began to... When two people are together constantly, I...
Please go on, Mrs. Stone.
I obtained the chloroform. I kept it in a drawer. But I'd never had a secret from Oscar. Never. On any score. So on New Year's Eve after our party, I told him I had it and where it was. He spoke to me sadly, but kindly... Grieved that I'd been feeling about him as I did. Then he went to sleep. Or I thought he did. The next I knew, he was dead.
Did you look at the bottle?
Yes, I couldn't tell how much was gone. I took the bottle and I poured what was in it from the train as I went.
The autopsy report came to Edgar as well. He wrestled with himself and finally took the only course which seemed open.
Inspector Seward?
Yes, come in, sir. Sit down.
Thank you.
I understand you have some information in the matter of the death of Oscar Stone.
I do. You see, I bought the chloroform.
They should be in here somewhere, Sergeant.
If the little parson is telling the truth.
I'm sure he is. He'll let himself in for something with that woman, didn't he?
It looks that way. Leave it to a woman every time.
Grease spots, eh? Not bad for an amateur. I suppose this is the gorse patch where you said he threw those small bottles.
Yes, this is the place.
I found one, Inspector. 2 ounce size.
The others can't be far.
Yes, here are 2 more. 1 ounce capacity, these.
And here's the fourth. Innocent little things, aren't they, sir?
Anne Stone, I have a warrant for your arrest on the charge of willful murder of your husband.
Edgar Sweet, I have a warrant for your arrest. You stand charged as an accessory before the fact in the murder of Oscar Stone.
The trial took place at the next assizes.
Gentlemen of the jury, the Attorney General, who has this case in hand, with full knowledge of the facts, will present no evidence against the Reverend Mr. Sweet. You are therefore directed to find him not guilty, and I shall order his release at once.
Edgar Sweet left the courtroom, a much wiser young man. The trial of Anne Stone proceeded and rested entirely on the medical evidence.
Dr. Fletcher, you have described yourself as an expert in criminal toxicology. We have accepted you as such. Is that correct?
It is, sir.
Very well. Now, I call the particular attention of the jury to the answers you will give to these questions, as they will have great bearing on the evidence against my client. First, sir, have you ever known of a recorded case of murder by liquid chloroform?
No.
Is there any record, to your knowledge, of the forcible administration of this liquid, of anyone pouring it down a victim's throat?
There is not.
If the victim were sleeping, for instance...
The burning would waken him. It'd probably go down his windpipe, not his gullet.
And there would be burns, clearly visible after death.
There would be.
Then, in your expert opinion, Dr. Fletcher, is it impossible to commit murder by liquid chloroform?
Nothing's impossible, but it's highly improbable.
Thank you, Doctor. That is all.
The chief witness of the Crown, Dr. Fletcher, had given his testimony. All that remained, in the opinion of the defending counsel, was to create a reasonable doubt in the minds of the jury. He called no witnesses, but spoke for 6 hours, summing up. In essence, he said...
Oscar Stone was a loving, if elderly, husband. He felt his life was over. Remember, he was an eccentric who believed in having 2 wives. Can we say that this man, who had given so much to his sweet young wife, was not prepared to give her the greatest gift of all, her freedom? Once he knew that chloroform was in the house, could he not have taken it himself and passed quickly into the coma which ended in death? And if he gave this lovely girl freedom, are you, who sit in judgment, to do any less?
The judge was clear, if somewhat caustic, in his charge to the jury.
There have been sweet faces which hid guilty consciences before. When a young wife and a young man are thrust into daily contact by a doting husband, strange events have a way of taking place. All this is true, but one salient remains. You may find this woman guilty as charged only if no reasonable doubt exists in your minds that she did commit the crime of which she stands.
The jury deliberated for over 2 hours. They were 12 solemn men when they filed back into the jury box. Anne Stone rose to face them. The clerk asked for the verdict. The foreman rose and spoke clearly.
We have considered the grave suspicions in this case, but find no evidence that would indicate who administered the poison to the victim. We find the accused, therefore, not guilty.
The But despite that perhaps surprising verdict of not guilty, the four famous small bottles can be seen today in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
No double jeopardy. That's an ancient English law, no double jeopardy. One cannot be tried twice for the same offense. It was felt, therefore, that since Anne Stone had been acquitted, if she had committed this crime, she ought to tell the world how it had been done. But no. All that was heard thereafter from Anne Stone was a letter addressed to her defending counsel, read as follows. Dear Sir Edward, I feel I owe my life to your earnest efforts. I have not been a good woman, and my temptations have been terrible. But though I have not kept my vows, you will judge me mercifully. And there the case rests. Now, until we meet next time, in the same place, and I tell you another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar. I told you, that's my name. What do you want, an affidavit?
I've got to be sure.
Look, you've got me out here in the middle of the jungle with a gun in my back.
Don't turn around.
And I can't even see you. You think I'd be kidding you at a time like this?
Any move at all, and it'll be your last.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Santo Tomas, Mexico. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. To the Home Office, Northeastern Fidelity and Bonding, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of additional expenses during my investigation of the Alvin Summers embezzlement of $75,000. Item 12, 2 cents. Just what I figured my life was worth at the moment. Gloria Harris had taken me down the beach and into the jungle to show me the hut where Alvin Summers had been hiding out. There was no sign of him. But I heard a noise outside in the underbrush and went out to investigate. I didn't see a thing. But I felt something. A gun barrel pressing against the back of my neck.
I want to talk to you, Dollar.
Well, you've got a quaint way of arranging a conversation, believe me. I could do better if you take away that gun.
Johnny!
Don't answer.
Who's answering?
Johnny!
Wait.
Well?
Be in your hotel room in exactly 1 hour.
Look, what's this all about?
You're looking for Alvin Summers, aren't you?
Oh, am I?
Johnny, where are you?
I've got some information about him for you.
Well, let's have it now.
Now. I've got to talk to you alone. Be in your hotel room in town in 1 hour, understand?
Look.
Do as I say and be sure you're alone. Alone.
Okay.
Now, just keep looking straight ahead. Don't turn around and don't tell anyone about this. Anyone. Understand?
You make it pretty clear.
I'll be watching you, Dollar. You won't see me, but I'll see you.
I can believe it, mister.
Johnny, please. Johnny, where... Oh, here you are.
Yeah, here I am.
Why didn't you answer me?
I came out here looking for a guy, remember? How am I going to find him if I start shouting at you?
But I got worried when you didn't come back to the hut.
Yeah.
That noise you heard outside, did you see anything?
No, I didn't see a thing.
Johnny, didn't you find anything to give you a lead on where Summers might be?
I don't know.
But you said if I helped you find him, you'd see what you could do about getting me a passport back to the States.
Yeah, sure. Come on, let's get out of here.
It suits me fine. This place gives me the creeps, all these trees and vines. Broad daylight, but you can't see a thing.
I know.
My imagination's still working overtime. I've got that feeling we're being watched again. Funny, isn't it?
Yeah, real funny. We kept on toward the beach. Gloria was fidgeting because she thought somebody was watching us. I was fidgeting because I knew somebody was. And I had a strong hunch he was the man whose long-distance phone call to the States brought me down to Mexico in the first place. We got back to the beach. I took Gloria up to her hotel and went down to mine in town. As I crossed the lobby toward the stairway to the second floor, out popped a familiar face.
Hello, Frank.
Oh, Carson. Lieutenant Gomez let you out of jail, huh?
Oh, now let's get one thing straight, friend. I never was actually in jail.
Well, you're lucky. I've seen the jail.
Huh? Oh, well, I just had to pay a fine, and that judge they got in this burg read me the riot act, but then they let me go.
Well, good. So now it's back to selling zippers, huh?
Sure is. And I'm behind schedule, too. Checking out right now, as a matter of fact. A lot of territory to cover. Like I always say, half
the world's waiting to get zipped up. Yeah, you told me.
I did. Say, Dower, I'd like you to do me a favor.
Oh?
That little trouble I got into last night up at the Playa del Mar Hotel, I'd sure appreciate it if you'd keep quiet about it when you get back to the States.
You mean you don't want anybody to know you got plastered, grabbed a serape and did the fandango?
Now, Dollar...
Broke a guitar over the musician's head?
Now, can't we just forget about that?
Believe me, I had until you reminded me. Now, Carson, I'm reasonably sure we don't know the same people and won't be seeing each other again. I'd say the secret of your lurid past was pretty safe.
Well, I sure hope so, friend. But about not seeing each other in the States, I was planning on looking you up.
Goody.
Yes, sir, I got a deal for you.
Sorry, but I have all the zippers I can use at the moment.
No, that's not what I mean, friend. I've been trying to get you into a cribbage game, remember?
How can I forget?
Well, instead, I'm going to look you up in the States and let you teach me to play gin rummy.
How could I be so lucky? Oh, sorry, I think that's my phone. So long, Carson.
I'll sure look you up back in the good old USA, friend.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Keep your hands on the table.
What? Oh, my shadow again.
Anybody follow you?
Not that I know of. You're early.
I know. And I searched your room.
That's become an old Santo Tomas custom.
To make sure you really were Johnny Dollar.
So now you know. What about it?
You can turn around.
I don't know. Maybe you'll tell me what... Wait a minute. A decent shave and you'd match that photo I have in my suitcase. Alvin Summers.
Yeah. I'm Alvin Summers.
I don't get it. I had you figured for the man who made that long-distance call to the States that tipped me off to come down here.
You're right about that, too.
You put the finger on yourself?
If you want to call it that.
Well, what happened? Your deal go sour on you, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, sit down. Take it easy. Tell me about it. I'll turn on the overhead fan. Pretty stuffy in here.
Dollar, that phone call you got just now...
Hung up. Clerk downstairs must have rung the wrong room.
Or somebody was checking to see if you were here.
Could be. Okay, suppose you start from the top.
What was that?
Relax.
What are you...
Just one of the charming features of this room.
Why?
You turn on that big overhead fan, it slams the balcony door.
Oh, well, turn it off, will you? I'm kind of edgy.
Yeah, sure.
You asked me if my deal had gone sour. It went very sour. Oh, I had it all figured out. I was planning it for a year. I was going to embezzle the $75,000 and really live big.
Yeah.
Instead of that, I spent all my time hiding. Mexico City, Cuernavaca, Tampico, you name it, I was there. Always undercover, always hiding. Did you ever spend much time hiding, Dollar?
No, not much.
Oh, it's a great life, great. Every time somebody looks at you on the street, you're sure he's after you, tailing you. You wake up in the middle of the night, you see a shadow outside. It turns out to be just a bush, but you spend the rest of the night sweating. Finally, I just couldn't take it anymore. The rest of my life, that way...
You know, Summers, a lot of guys figure that out before it's too late. Too bad you didn't.
Yeah. So, finally, I phoned the bonding company long distance. I knew they'd send an investigator... They sent you. I thought if I could talk to someone like you, see what could be done.
There's only one thing can be done at this point, Summers. Come back with me to the States. Bring back what's left of the money.
$60,000.
That'll help. But you know there can't be any deal.
Yeah, I guess I always knew that. Here, take the gun.
Thanks. Now, what about the money?
It's in a safe deposit box in Mexico City. Here. Here's the key.
One thing I don't get, though, Summers.
Yeah?
You wanted me to contact, but you were sure playing hard to find.
Well, I had to be careful. I got a look at you the first day you arrived. I wasn't sure you were the one, so I decided to come to your room that night, but then I saw somebody else coming here, so I gave up.
Who was it?
The bellboy.
Benito? Hey, that'll be just before he got knifed.
Oh, no. I wasn't the one who killed him, Dollar. I'm no killer. Just a fool who runs away with somebody else's money, remember? Anyway, I didn't have another chance to get to Italy today. I had to keep undercover so they wouldn't find me.
Wait a minute. Who's they?
The man who arranged for me to come down here and the girl who is going to make it all worthwhile.
The girl? Summers,
leave
don't...
me, Johnny.
Gloria!
Hello, baby. Here, let me...
Leave the gun right where it is, Johnny. Put that safe deposit key on the table.
I guess you're calling them.
Thanks.
And it all adds up. You found out Summers here was planning to turn himself in. You didn't want that money to slip through your fingers. But Summers disappeared from his hideout. You couldn't find him, so you figured you'd let me find him for you.
That's right. And it worked. And you're so right about that money. You think I'd give it up now?
Gloria.
Keep out of it, Alvin. If you want to go back and be a Boy Scout, that's your business. But the money stays with me. Johnny.
Yeah?
This doesn't have to be the end of it for us.
Oh. So now we get the pitch about making beautiful music, huh?
I'm not kidding, Johnny. $60,000's a lot of money.
You know, you put on quite an act. Maybe I believed a little bit of it. But if I did, I quit the moment you walked through that door just now.
Okay, Johnny, that's enough. I thought maybe you'd be smart, but if you won't, you leave me no choice.
No, Gloria, don't. Gloria! The balcony. Out on the balcony.
Hold it!
Carson.
Stay right where you are, friend.
Oh, shut up. She's dead.
She crossed me.
You and she were working against each other. She wanted me to lead her to Summers. You wanted to find him yourself.
That's right. And Summers, you took a lot of finding.
That's why you killed Benito the bellboy to shut his mouth. Then you went up to the big hotel and clowned around so you'd get arrested and that way set up an alibi for the evening.
I was pretty proud of that little idea, Dollar. And it's all worked out just the way I wanted it. You see, right from the start, I...
Carson was holding all the trumps. They were made out of lead and I knew he was going to start dealing them any second. Then I remembered the overhead fan. The switch was right next to my elbow. The balcony door was open and Carson had his back to it.
What are you doing?
Just turning on the fan. I need some air. Can you blame me?
Yeah. You're sweating, aren't you, Dollar? What's the matter? You losing your nerve? Well, it really doesn't matter. What the...
The door slammed. Carlson whirled. And I knocked the lamp off the table. By the time I hit the floor, my gun was out. I picked up the lamp and lit it again. Summers was crouched in a corner. Across the room, sitting on the floor, was Carson staring stupidly down at the red bullet hole in his side. I picked his gun up off the floor.
Dollar!
Summers, call the police station, Lieutenant Gomez.
Yeah, all right.
Help me, Dollar. It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. But not as much as it hurt Benito and Gloria.
I...
You finally got me into a game, didn't you, friend? And you lost. Expense account item 13. Double the amount of item 1. $440. Transportation back to the States for Alvin Summers and me. And you know, I turned him over to the authorities as soon as we got back. That's the way he wanted it. Gloria? Well... Once in a while, I get to wondering if she really meant some of the things she told me. Not that it matters. Conclusion of report. Expense account total $923. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be a new exciting story on Johnny Dollar beginning next Monday.
Next week, the Valentine matter. And believe me, it's not the kind of Valentine you'd wish on even your worst enemy. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood, written by Robert Reif. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Marvin Miller, Don Diamond, Tony Barrett, and Parley Bear. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking. From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Niles Pearson, Johnny, at Universal Adjustment Bureau.
Oh, how are you, Niles?
Worried at the moment. Can you help me out?
I don't know. What's on your mind?
$65,000 worth of horse flesh. Ever hear of Duke Red?
Yeah, I think so. The Futurity last year?
That's a horse. Johnny, Columbia Indemnity is going to have to settle a claim on him.
Why?
Duke Red was seriously injured and had to be destroyed.
Did you say 65,000?
Yeah.
No wonder you're worried, Niles.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Universal Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Duke Red matter. Expense account item 1, $197.80. Airfare and incidentals getting me from Hartford to San Francisco and a town about 40 miles south of there called San Pietro. At the San Pietro Hotel, I learned that the Abbott Ranch was some 5 miles outside of town, but that the Abbott Stables maintained offices in San Pietro.
Hello.
Hello. I'd like to get in touch with Mr. Abbott. My name's Johnny Dollar.
Oh, Mr. Abbott's never here. He's mostly out at the ranch. You'll have to see him there.
Oh. Well, is there any place in town I can rent a car?
Not that I know of.
Bus?
Afraid not. What's your business with Mr. Abbott?
Insurance. I'm here to adjust a claim of his.
Oh, yes, Duke Red.
Could I see Mr. Abbott's business manager? Mr. Monroe.
Mr. Monroe isn't with Mr. Abbott's office any longer.
Well, now, that's funny. He was with Mr. Abbott's office 3 days ago when he notified us that a claim was being filed in this matter. I got it right here on paper.
Oh. Well, you might as well know. Mr. Abbott and Mr. Monroe ended things. Mr. Abbott let him go.
Oh, I see. Who's in charge now?
No one at the moment. Maybe I can put you in touch with Mr. Abbott at the ranch.
Good.
9433, please.
Smoke?
No, thanks. Hello, Cully. This is Judy at the office. Is Mr. Abbott there? When do you expect him? Thanks. Out for the day, Mr. Dollar.
I'm not doing very well, am I?
I wish I could be more helpful.
Well, maybe you can. This man, Monroe, if you could tell me where I can get in touch with him, I'd appreciate it.
Didn't you understand? He doesn't work for Mr. Abbott any longer.
Yeah, I know, but he did notify us about the claim. Evidently, he's aware of the circumstances in the matter, and that's what I'm here to talk about.
I see.
Well?
Mr. Monroe isn't in San Pietro any longer. He moved out of town on Tuesday.
But where?
He didn't leave a forwarding address, Mr. Dollar.
Where's the laundry going to send their bills? How about the finance company?
He just left, and that's it.
You want to know something? I don't get it. She dropped her eyes, mumbled something about having work to do, and we left it at that. I put it in the back of my mind and asked someone else about this Mr. Monroe. Then I got busy solving one of my immediate problems. Expense account item 2, $50. Deposit on a 1940 Terraplane station wagon I managed to rent from a man who ran a filling station. Our deal was $10 a day plus gas. Item 3, $5.08, a tank full of gas. The Terraplane bucked a little, but it got me outside of town about 4 miles to the office of a tall, lanky man who never took his hat off. Dr. James Gorey, veterinarian.
All the way from Hartford, Connecticut, huh?
Yes, that's right.
And having sunshine like this back there now, I'll bet you you'll hear about the Duke, huh?
Duke Red, yes. The people who wrote the policy want me to look into the matter.
Hope there's nothing wrong. Is there?
No, matter of procedure, Doctor. Mr. Abbott's filed a claim for $65,000 indemnity, the loss of his racehorse. Mr. Monroe, who handled these matters for Mr. Abbott, is no longer around.
Yes, I understood they quarreled.
Yeah. Mr. Abbott isn't around at the moment either, so I came to you.
I don't believe I understand this. If Ben Abbott's bought that much insurance, he's sure got a right to file a claim for damages.
Well, it's just good business to get the facts, Dr. Gorey, that's all. Quite a bit of money involved here.
Yes. Red was worth lots more than that, though.
Oh?
That horse would have won over $500,000, in my opinion. Full racing term and all.
Yeah, well, it's too bad about all this. I understand from Mr. Monroe's correspondence that you treated the animal, Doctor.
Yes. I take care of most of Ben's stock when they're here, when he's not on the road racing.
Uh-huh. I'd like to know exactly how the accident happened, Doctor. There was something about a piece of machinery?
A tractor with the blades up.
Huh?
Duke Red stumbled back into it hard. Cut through his right hamstring all the way to the bone.
I see. Do you make out a report in a case like this?
In any case, Mr. Dollar, an animal is just like a human. This one's more valuable than most, I guess. Any of them liable to get sick or hurt sometime. Here's the report.
Thanks.
They're pretty careful out there with all those animals. Naturally, they constitute a considerable investment on Ben Abbott's part.
Yeah, sure. Most of the tendons cut, huh?
Yes. Them as wasn't severed were ruptured.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
What?
Well, there's a notation about the carcass. Cremated on the premises?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. The accident happened Sunday night, cremated same night. Why so fast, Doctor?
Ben Abbott wanted it that way. Can't blame him, I guess.
Maybe not. But it'll make my job a little more complicated. Unless some x-rays were taken of the injury.
There was no need for me to go into x-rays. Paralysis had already set in by the time I got there.
Yeah, but that doesn't help me much, does it?
Huh? What do you mean?
No carcass, no proof of the extent of injury to the animal.
Lord, man, the animal was in a bad way. It was a mortal injury.
How was he destroyed?
Shotgun.
Could he have lived? I mean, long enough for me
you
to...
You don't understand, Mr. Dollar. It'd have been wrong not to destroy him with injuries like that.
Mr. Abbott called you in right after the accident happened, did he?
Yes. I got out there maybe 15 minutes later. Ben was alone with the horse. The minute I laid eyes on that animal, I knew he was finished, that he'd have to be destroyed.
You advised Mr. Abbott that the horse had to be destroyed?
I didn't have to. He knew it. He knows horse flesh as good as any vet alive.
Well, did you consider calling in someone else?
What?
Another doctor for consultation.
I tell you, man, there was no use in going into anything like that.
Did Mr. Abbott ask you to call in another vet?
No, he did not.
Who else was there?
Nobody.
No stable hand? No member of Mr. Abbott's family?
No.
Well, who saw the accident?
Mr. Abbott.
Who else?
I don't know, Mr. Dollar. Like I said, just Ben was there when I got there.
I haven't any proof that the animal was injured.
You just read my report.
I've got $65,000 to worry about, Dr. Gorey. I'll need more than just a report.
Young man, I've been in business here over 30 years. I've done business with Ben Abbott over 20 years. You come here asking me if I called in another vet, if I did this, if I did that. There isn't a man around here who won't take my word. Why don't you?
Part of my job, Dr. Gorey.
Huh?
I can't take anybody's word for anything.
Mr. Dollar, I'd be obliged if you'd get out of here.
I obliged, Dr. Gorey. I got out of there. Driving back to San Pietro on my Terraplane, it struck me as odd that Gorey, certainly aware of the value of the injured horse, had not taken so much as a photograph to verify the story of the accident. For that reason, I decided to verify Dr. Gorey himself.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe you can help me.
All right, try me.
Well, this Dr. Gorey, is he new around here?
You're joking.
No, I'm not.
He's a fixture. He's been in this part of the country 30 or 40 years. They say he's the best vet this side of Lexington, Kentucky.
That takes in quite a bit of real estate. Is he loaded?
I think he could retire and give advice over the phone. These horse racing people make new parents look like indifferent vegetables.
They do?
You don't know. A horse sneezes once and they're ready to call the Mayo brothers. Dr. Gorey's practically the whole Mayo clinic in horsey circles. Say, how did you know about him?
The insurance report.
Of course. Well, I suppose you'd want to talk to him. Look, I'm driving out that way. I'd be glad to give you a lift.
Oh, that's mine out there.
That?
Yeah, rented it from a filling station man down the street.
Oh. Well, you just drive right on past the filling station for about 3 miles and you'll see Dr. Gorey's place.
Oh, thanks, but I've already been there.
Huh?
Yeah, just left him.
Well, then why are you asking me about him? Heavens.
Just asking.
You're a funny one.
Hey, what's your name?
Judy Brown.
About finished here for the day?
As a matter of fact, yes.
Well, Judy Brown, let you and I go get something to eat and drink.
How do you know I haven't got a husband?
I don't. Have you?
No.
Well, how about it?
Give me 5 minutes.
Judy, I'm going to get right to the point. How long have you worked for Mr. Abbott?
1.5 years. Why?
You're from San Pietro?
No, San Francisco. I answered an ad. I wanted to get out some country for a while, away from the city life.
Mm-hmm. All right. What happened between Monroe and Abbott?
They had a quarrel. A loud, loud quarrel. Mr. Abbott's very good with a quarrel.
Oh, is he?
Yes. You know, even I've wondered about that.
What?
Mr. Monroe quarreling with Mr. Abbott and then just leaving all of a sudden. Probably went to San Francisco. I don't know where else he... Oh.
What's the matter, Judy?
That looks like Mr. Monroe now.
Monroe?
Yes, end of the bar. I thought he was away. It's him, all right.
Well, I'd like to talk to him.
You'll have to hurry. Looks like he's getting ready to leave.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Sure.
Hey. Hey, just a minute.
Calling me?
Yes. Mr. Monroe?
Yes?
Johnny Dollar, Universal Adjustment Bureau. I'm in town about the claim on Duke Red. But I heard you'd left town.
I had. You talked to Mr. Abbott about that claim.
Well, you had power of attorney for him and signed the claim. I wonder if I could talk to you.
I'm leaving town again. Right away.
Well, look, can I just have a minute of your time?
It wasn't my horse. It belonged to Ben Abbott. Talk to him. Now, get out of my way.
Oh, hey, wait a minute.
Let him handle his own dirty business.
Look, Mr. Monroe.
Get out of my way.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, there's proof that things are just about as wrong in this case and as dangerous as they can get. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Case closed for this week. We'll continue our Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar next week with parts 2 and 3 of the Duke Red Matter. And we'll also hear something from Night Watch. In the meantime, RelicRadio.com has past episodes of this show and all the other old-time radio shows, along with links to our Facebook page, forum, Shoutcast stream, and everything else Relic Radio. You can find it all at RelicRadio.com. There's also a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. I appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thanks to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another episode, Case Closed.